Please be seated as we start Indie AF Live, and let's give a hearty welcome to London Podfest Stage, Quirky Voice's very own, one of the 40 over 40 podcast magazines, Groovy Podcast Creatives. Producer, director, editor, voice actor, and more, Indie AF Live pod host, Sarah Goldberg.
Indie AF Live at the Podcast Festival 2022. I love the smell of a burning laptop in the morning. May the door be with you. Mommy, I see creative people. Here there be social media dragons. We fight them together. Are you with me? Yeah. I have power. Oh, praise the all hearing ears. Will it render or will it clash? Just cross everything, that's all we've got. Plugins, where we're going, we don't need plugins. There's no place like audio fiction. With me, there's no place like audio fiction. There's no place like audio fiction. There's no place like audio fiction. There's no place like, that's amazing. Hello and hearty welcomes from me. I'm so excited to see your beautiful faces here. As someone remarked at the back, it should be video because you're looking so amazing. today we have some amazing guests imparting all their wisdom on their own audio fiction adventures, and it looks like there's an array of people here who might want to share some stuff too. If you don't know who I am, but I think people here do, I'm Sarah Golding, and I do voice acting and a myriad of other jobs with Quirky Voices. I have such fun behind a microphone, you wouldn't believe, and I make this particular show to celebrate the folks who make their own audio fiction. We needed a forum to help share what's happening with all these fantastic stories, and today I have some outstanding people to share their stories with you. I want to say a thank you heartily to all of my Patreons, who without them I wouldn't have the confidence to kind of pitch to stuff like this, right? So thank you to all of you for supporting me. And I want to have a huge huzzahs for someone helping me today. Oliver Morris at the back. Ollie is an amazing performer, producer, writer, wordsmith, and of course tech help today. So pleased you're here. I think it's really important that we recognise your acting prowess too. If you haven't heard The Goblet Wire, Oliver's performance on that in a recent episode has been astounding, so look out for that. Ollie, how are you doing today? Trains, right? Trains. I think if you're ready for Indie AF, shall we just get on with it? Yay! In the beginning, there was fire and... Yeah, I can't keep doing that voice. Let's go, Morgan. And many moons and songs and stories later, there was tape to record the stories and the songs, and the tape was cut and moved and rearranged and stuck together with other tape, a bunk bed of tapes, if you will, spliced to make something new, some pieces ripped mid-sentence, joining with another cut in its prime, some merged into music, their voices fading gently into the spool of forever silence. Some dropped and left to languish and fade, stepped on and neglected on the cutting room floor of life. Miss.
Whoa, boy.
Can't do horses, sorry.
And then came riding into town in the electronic age, the DAW.
Damn you, digital audio workstations with your fancy plug-in knobs and faders.
And no more littered floors.
Maybe some FLAWs though, huh? Like when they crash, when you put 60 hours work or more into a show and they just...
No, we're not here to talk about that. Don't interrupt, please.
No, you interrupted me first.
I think you were finished.
I had so much more to give.
Tape has its place in the audio revolution.
Sure does. Thank you for recognizing that, you future Christmas audio future. But I got a message for you, for you all. If you feel like you're on the cutting room floor of life, have faith that any moment now, someone is going to lift you up and attach themselves to you to make a new life, a new sound, a new phase of your own exciting, adventurous, joyous future. So don't you give up now.
That's beautiful, man.
I know. Please welcome to the show, Sammy Suisi of Desperado Podcast, winner of last year's London Podfest. Have a seat, Sammy. Sammy is a writer, voice actor, creative extraordinaire, a true rainbow of grooviness in this Yes Huzzahs. So, Sammy, very excited to have you here today. Thank you for coming all the way. You have two live shows today. How are you feeling?
Good. Yeah, ready.
If you haven't got your tickets for later, 4:30, Desperado Live, you must go. And, so it's a really exciting kind of arena, isn't it, to be telling our stories right now? And for me, I think you produce, you act, you do all sorts of crazy things in this wonderful Desperado podcast. Can you, in five sentences or less, if folks haven't yet heard it, summarize why they should listen? Why is it so awesome? What is it about?
Desperado is a crazy road trip with three avatars of death from different cultures, respectively Mexican, Haitian, and Japanese, who are running away from modern-day crusaders and fighting to protect that heritage. It's tragic, it's funny, it's gay. What more do you want?
Huzzah! So, without further ado, I think, shall we listen to a little clip of how amazing it is? Let's go. Ollie!
We had been driving through an orange field the size of an ocean when Gia suddenly hit the brake and turned the car around. It slammed on the accelerator.
Whoa, okay. That's fucking ominous.
Something's running in the field.
All right.
Roxanne quickly assembled her rifle as Gia flipped a switch behind the wheel. Opening the sunroof, I saw a quick flash of light from the corner of my eyes bouncing off something red. Something was running and keeping up with the car. Something with a crystal skin.
I have no line of sight. Can we just get out of this orange field?
We're in Florida!
Bullets won't pierce their skin, but I think I can open the
way. No, baby, I'm a professional. And just like my face, these bullets were blessed.
And with that, Roxanne stood up through the roof and locked onto her first turn. Something tumbled through the field and stopped.
That's one. Two.
Roxanne!
A demon jumped from the opposite field, claws out, ready to tear her apart. But Roxanne didn't turn. Instead, she bent over backward and pulled the trigger.
Eat my ass, Sandy Oakley! All right, I think that was the last one.
Did you just no-scope a demon out of the air?
It was the size of a car. What is there to scope?
Fantastic. It's so full of adventures. It's almost like anime in audio form, right? But yeah, you're the winners of last year's London Podcast Festival Audio Fiction Showcase. And how did that feel to win? Why do you think Desperado did win? Big up yourself.
I'll do my best. No, it was fantastic. And also because we performed along such incredible shows as well, it was truly an honor to win. And it just felt great. Why? I think the scope of our story helped a lot. Yeah. We have characters from all over the world. We have culture meeting, interacting. And I think that resonated with a lot of people. Yeah. It looks pretty tight, I think.
Yeah, it is a beautiful show. And if you haven't yet found it, I heartily recommend that you go out and find it today and binge it all and come today to watch it live. But yeah, I think the other interesting part of that I found with your group is as well that you've become a part of Valence Network, which is an American network. And essentially, the folks that run that, if you haven't come across them, are positive mouthpieces for audio fiction and trying to level up the importance of diversity and inclusivity as well in audio fiction podcasting. And I was wondering, how did that relationship come about, and what does it mean to you to be part of a network like that? What do you get out of it?
Yeah, the people that make Valens, Hug House Productions,
Hug House, yes.
Were the first ones, I think, that heard of this and started spreading the word. So I knew them from the start, but initially I joined another network that had reached out. And it was fairly beneficial at first, but then it turned out quite poorly. Okay. And when that happened, the folks at Hug House were there to welcome me. Yeah. And since then, it's just been great. The support that you get from a network, especially if you're used to doing everything on your own, having people to run things by, get feedback, and also just look out for opportunities for you or give you advice on editing and writing, etc. It's extremely helpful.
Great. So, would you advise anyone thinking to join a network that's a good thing to do, and why? What?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, obviously do your research, because it can end up being more of a hassle than a helpful thing.
Yes.
I think if the network is a good fit for you, I think there's pretty much no downsides. It's only, it's support. And as I said, usually I know folks tend to do everything on their own as well, so all the help you can get is incredible.
Cushion of support, brilliant.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And there's friends of mine working in various different mediums of theatre and film and television and so on, and who are suddenly thinking, oh, there's a bit of a spotlight focus coming onto audio fiction, maybe I should start to tell my stories in that kind of realm. And you've come from screenwriting background, haven't you? And so any advice for folks who are really keen to write for audio, what do they need to be looking at?
Well, I think the difference between screen and audio, obviously just the fact that you don't have the visuals, obviously, means that, I mean, to me was almost, I found it almost better, just because it felt like a lot of the things I like to write, which was description, prose, etc., will end up just in the script, in screenwriting, like completely cut out in the cutting room floor. Whereas in audio, to me, I always said it's all dessert. You get to write all the things you want to write. And because you don't have the image to either replace, for example, an expression would do the work of a line of dialogue. In audio, you don't have that.
Yeah.
They all work together all the time, rather than being able to replace one by the other. So you do have to be, you do have to keep that in mind, that you have to be good at dialogue descriptions, and then think of the sound as your visuals, let's say, but they can't really replace one another.
Yeah, brilliant, thank you. And I think it's safe to say that you are one of my top five audio fiction picks of the week, alongside, I have to say, Silly Old Bear, How I Died, Apollyon, and Midnight Burger, with a bonus listen to Goblet Wire, which I mentioned earlier. But I think it's time we asked a few of our audience, don't we? I'm brandishing this now. So, Ollie, intro, please.
What did you say? Enjoy your audio fiction of the day.
Hello. Would you like to hold this microphone and share with us your favourite top five audio film picks of your week?
A really horrible question.
Yeah. I know. I'm just going to put a few more people on the spot, I have to say.
So, top five for me of all time. I was thinking, what was really influential to me. So, this is in no particular order. We've got Great Chameleon War, which is a very surreal sort of sci-fi. It's very strange.
Amazing.
Ghost on a Train, which is a sort of, is made by friends, but I just like it a lot. They clearly have a good time. Limetown, I think, was quite big for me, which I know it's not indie, but yeah, it was very sort of important to me.
Yeah.
There was a Halo audio drama that I used to listen to when I was very, very young, and it was this is cool. And then I started doing that. And then one of the early ones that I listened to as well was The Infinite Bad as well, because that's quite...
Hooray!
That was quite big for me it was just very cool and slightly weird as well, especially towards the end, so I was very into that.
Fantastic.
Those are my top five.
Can we give a round of applause for Kai's top five? Amazing shows. Thank you. I'm going to come to this row. collectively. We have the lovely Chloe. Hello, how are you today? Oh, thank you for coming all the way. Your top five audio fiction picks.
Well, first of all, I know many season two secretives and kill the secrets now.
Share them.
Absolutely not, but yeah, baby. I have been catching up with the Silverses on my very, very, very long bus journey here.
Ground.
Love so much all the time. Absolute beloved podcast.
Yeah.
I've also been catching up with The Adventure Zone. In no way indie. Just love it. Second season of The Adventure Zone Dust. Never thought we were getting it. Makes me very happy. But not at all what anyone is here to hear about. Very excited for A Jar of Rebuke coming back. Yes. That brings me joy. Love non-binary people. I'm saying that as a non-binary person, I'm not just out here like, oh yeah, I love these other people. No relation. shucks, so much stuff. Anyone else want to tell me about podcasts they love?
The Orphans. I'm going to recommend The Orphans.
Huzzah, thank you.
Thank you, wonderful.
Thank you, Chloe, from the 72% Kira team. And we'll do one more, Mr. Crumfly.
I need to do a list that doesn't include me.
No, just do all of your shows. Just do all of your shows.
That's hard. five podcasts. I'll do all time, because this week is hard. All time, obviously, Wooden Overcoats. Quite simply the finest audio comedy ever written. Very nearly close to Cabin Pressure, but Cabin Pressure is not indie. What else? I'm going to say it because he's sitting next to me. I still love Mars Corp. Season 2 will turn up at some point, I bet.
Season 2 is coming!
Victoriosity, obviously, Jen and Chris, the superb creative team, and the rest of the guys behind that. Byron Chronicles, yes, I'm in it occasionally, but Derek Busby is one of the great old guys who's been working in audio fiction for basically over a decade, because that was one of my first big breaks playing a lizard man, strangely enough. And Where the Stars Fell. I'm really enjoying Where the Stars Fell. Yes, I appear one episode, but I've been listening to the whole rest of the show, and it's really, really good.
Brilliant. Thank you so much. Can we have a round of applause for Chloe, Kareem, and Time?
What did we do? We shared pod AF highlights with
So, Sammy, back to you. With regards to your writing, so you sit inside your project in as much as you are voice acting within it, as well as kind of writing and producing and everything. And I think there's a lot of people who wear those hats, right, when they're creating at the moment. So any top tips for how to survive that and not to be your own worst critic?
I think it's bound to happen, but as much as you can, and I'm still struggling with that, do pace yourself.
Yeah.
Not everything has to be done. As it's always useful to give yourself deadlines, but ultimately nobody, we're not surgeons. Nobody's going to die if the episode doesn't come out exactly on the day. Right. And it does take time to make something good. So, yeah, I think the best thing would be pace yourself, because I'm still really struggling with that.
Yeah. Who else is in this room? Yeah. A few nods and giggles, yeah. And I think ambitions-wise, what are your personal ambitions for future of audio fiction? What do you envisage your next to be?
I think I want to make a few thousand shows. I think that seems reasonable.
500 with Kareem in.
At least.
Amazing. And have you got other irons in the fire at the moment, or is it focused on Desperado?
I kind of had to be focused on Desperado. I do have, I always have three projects at the same time. But just so I could get everything done, I was like, all right, let's ignore everything for a while. And finish Desperado, and then we'll see what happens.
Huzzah. So, questions from the audience. Has anyone got a burning thing they need to ask Sammy today? Yes, Naomi.
Obviously, there are a lot of different avatars of death. What made you pick those three specifically?
That's a really good question. Honestly, I started thinking about this story a while ago, and I think those were just some cultural influences I had growing up. And so when it came to choose those three, I don't know, it just kind of happened naturally.
Thank you. Any other further questions? Yeah, thank you. But what's your name, sir?
Christian.
Hello, Christian. Welcome.
Hello.
Hi. I know you mentioned that you had a bad experience with a network before moving to a good one. I'm not expecting you to, like, name and shame, but what...
AAA Network. Yeah.
What specifically was so bad about it? What happened that made it a bad choice to join a network?
It's supposed to make everything easier, and it made everything more difficult and last longer. Just uploading an episode would need like 5 different emails and like 3 days delay and stuff like that. Okay. No support of any kind, creatively, technically, which was offered in the beginning and then just completely dwindled out. So yeah, mostly just made everything more difficult.
Thank you very much. Brilliant. Well, can I just have everybody give a hearty round of applause to the amazing Sammy Sawisi of Desperado Club. So, more adventures to be had in the podcasting world. I think for me, the key thing about audio fiction is the collaborative process, yes?
Stop there! Stop the interview right now!
I think that what's happening here is the energy has been so groovy and exciting that someone's fallen out of a podcast. don't worry, I got this. Corinne, Riley,
your friends are safe for the moment. Now, hand over your guest.
What?
This person is under arrest for actions contrary to the laws of Relife. And so are you, Georgina Verney.
Oh, no. To you, it's Mistress Verney.
Quiet! You are Georgina Verney, lead recruiter for the dissident rabble known as Cyclone.
And who do you think you are?
I'm Officer Cairns of the Lander Extinction Squad.
No. I know exactly who you are. I know your name. Leaves a nasty taste in the mouth. I'm just wondering what kind of jurisdiction you have here in King's Place, London. As far as I was aware, Lander Wing was disbanded, discredited, all because of you.
I was personally appointed by Principal Galvin Tressler himself.
Galvin Tressler? And what's he doing now? Demoted to hauling frozen corpses from dust ball to dust ball. He's a nobody, and so are you.
Come with me, both of you.
Maybe you just want to sit down and talk about it. I know where your daughter is. If you want to see her again, let's chat.
I'm listening.
Ladies and gentlemen and folks in the room, it's Erica Sanderson of Cyclone Podcast. Cyclone Podcast started to release last week. There are 4 episodes out now. It is an epic sci-fi, glorious adventure, fueled by amazing female-led crews and characters, written by the fantastic Graz Richards, who popped that little something or other together for us to do today. If you haven't found it yet, it gets more epic by the episode. You must listen. So yes, thank you to Erica while the de-armoring happens. I just wanted to talk really about voice acting, because there's quite a few folks in here who I know voice act beautifully and well and a lot. And why? Why do you voice act? Maddie, let's come to you first. Well, you wear many hats, but voice acting is also something you are fantastic at. And I can't wait for people to hear our NDAF episode with that ridiculous sketch at the beginning. I do apologise for those. I can't help myself. So yeah, why do you love voice acting so, Maddie? What is it about it?
I'm a frustrated theatre kid, and I'm an introvert who loves to show off, so it's a great mixture of, oh, I can just sit in a room by myself and do a little story and no one has to look at me, but then people listen and like it. So
amazing. And I guess the fact is that yes, we in the last 5 years or so have been able to do this within our own spaces a lot more easily because the technology has and the connectivity has kind of developed, hasn't it? And as far as you're concerned, are there any roles that you would love to play? Is there somebody that you character type or archetype that you think haven't quite done yet but I'd want to?
I tend to go for like usually characters that are quite like myself that are quite quiet and all that kind of thing.
Same.
But I would like to go really out of the box and be a villain one day and just
yes.
really chew the scenery. I think that would be
They're
very fun.
They're the best, aren't they? So yeah, has anybody else got anything they would like? Is there a specific role you want to shout out into the universe that's going to make it happen? Max, I'm coming to you. Is there no roles at all? Have you done every... Do you take this, sir? Would you mind? No, you don't want it. Your face. Essentially, Max has made one of my most favourite shows of the last few years with your core team of thing, the Mars Corps that was mentioned earlier. And I think within that, there's so many more fantastic, larger-than-life characters, right? And I think for me, those are the fun ones. Christian, are you a voice actor?
I am, yeah.
You are? That's pretty. Would you like to share? Who would you like to be? Do you want to...
Oh, I'd have a crack at like a really gritty, messed up detective. Maybe.
We need that, don't we? Someone write that, please. Superb. And James, I know that you're coming to audio fiction from a writer's perspective, but you have also done a few bits and bobs here and there. So,
I have. I think one, it's funny you're asking about people's favourite roles, because one project I've been working on for the last year is going up to different, I went up to a bunch of different actors and asked what's a role you've always wanted to play.
Yes. You
and
did.
And then have written an audio drama episode, hour-long episode, to and recorded it, and you're in it.
I'm very exciting. I got to play my New York gangster, right? Everyone wants to do that. So, yeah, that was very exciting to be asked that question as well, right? What do you want to do? And actually try and think about what would float your boat is very exciting. Thank you, James. With the voice acting side of things, I think, for me as well, the fact that the collaborative ways that we can connect together have been so much more advanced, so that I was directing and working on Y2K a short while ago, and that was with people from Brazil and New Zealand and bits of America and Sweden and Dublin. And isn't that just wonderful that we can have these and actually make that doodle poll work so the time zones don't kill us? But yeah, I think there's so much more to be done in the world of voice acting, and if you want to employ any of us on stage or off today, chat later. I think we're ready for the one, the only, let's welcome to the stage, Erica Sanderson! Erica! How lovely to see you, Dee.
Hello.
Dee Armoured. As a also a fan of character acting, I think, should we just start this as old ladies and go get younger as the interview goes on? but yeah, first question, why should we try and encourage more cosplay at podcast events?
Because it's fun.
So next year, let's all dress up. so I want to just focus on auditions for a moment, because that's one of my bugbears as an actor, as well as a producer who gets those auditions in. And one of my key frustrations is that people send in those two or three takes, and there's maybe a tweak of one word, and you're thinking, this is your chance to showcase the immensity of your understanding of where this character can go, and you're changing one syllable. So yeah, I wonder if you can give some top tips for auditionees as to what they can do to
I think the first thing, the most important thing, is always read the instructions that you're given. You see a lot on, especially on sort of like VA actor Twitter and stuff, about, you know, oh yeah, yeah, give your wild take first and show them that you're completely random and different. It's like, no, read the instructions. Especially in how you like label your slates, if you label your files, all that kind of stuff. So I would say if you're going to give a max, if they give you an opportunity for different takes, first, play it straight. Do exactly what they've asked you to do. Second, give an alternative take. And then if you're going to do a third, that's your wild one. So that would be my advice, because there's nothing like a producer going, I don't know if I can, because I work as a theatre director. And when I host auditions with actors, I'm looking for, can I work with this person? Can I develop a relationship that means that if I come up with a suggestion, they're going to bounce back to me? So you're always looking for that rapport. And if someone just comes straight out of the gate, it's like, I don't know if I can work with you or not. And that sets you, well, me personally, it sets me on edge. And then that sort of puts a bit of a barrier in the relationship anyway. So I'd always say, follow the instructions, play it straight first. Do your alternate take, and then your third one is your wild card.
And you just auditioned for Sammy.
I did.
We've got the clip. No, we haven't got
it. I think I only gave him one because it was like really short on time, wasn't it?
Yeah. And it was perfect.
So, and I think that is fabulous advice, and I've obviously been doing it all wrong forever. But yeah, and with regards to other shows that you do, so you've been involved in so many fabulous shows that have also gone on to tour and be live too, and I wanted to focus on that today. I did speak to Erica as part of Mediva podcast, which was my previous one, which focused on voice acting, and we focused on character acting and developing characters. So if you want to learn a bit more about that, find that episode, because it's full, chock full of things, including that this lady was on Children Say the Funniest Things as one of those little kids that made you laugh lots when you were little. So do have that out too. But yeah, so your No Sleep team, you toured some stories across the US, UK, Europe, the world. I mean, how did that come about? And as a voice actor, have you got any advice for producers wanting to get a team like that together to tour?
Yeah, touring either theatre or in audio, it's massive, because you've got to look at the organisation of where your team is going to venues. So when we tour the States, we got a lot of people, a lot of the listeners kind of saying, well, why are you here and why are you here when you could have been here? And it's like, well, you need to go somewhere where you know you're going to sell tickets, so make sure that your listenership is high in that area in order to go there. Sometimes when you tour, you're going to be constricted by what the venue says. The venue says, oh, we've got a festival on, so you can only perform on these dates. And it's like, so we did crisscross a couple of states, and it was because the venue had said, we need you to perform on this day here. So it's a lot of organisation, it's a lot of stuff going on behind there. When it comes to actually performing, as again, I've got a very strong theatre background, so I don't believe it's just kind of standing in front of a mic. When we got to sort of playing on stage, we're all standing in a row, but it's the looks, it's the character interjections, it's, you know, even as you're following your script, you know, a page turn or a glance or how you walk on stage can create something. And when you are performing live audio or even rehearsed readings, it's something about where you're trying to almost paint the character in front of you so that the audience are hearing it, but they're also seeing in their own mind the character that you're trying to portray. And whatever you can do in order to help that, when I did No Sleep, I had we didn't have costume, we were kind of sort of all basic, but I had a particular cardigan that I wore that I was able to either roll the sleeves up for one character in the first story, because she was quite sort of laid back, and then there was another one where I was very, very sort of strict, and so I even folded over the collar up like that and stood at the microphone like this. And immediately you're trying to give any essence of the character that you can. I tend to be quite a physical performer, even in front of the mic as well, so I don't know if that brought anything into that. And then when I was working with the team on tour, it is a theatre show, so you know, when you come in, know what you're doing, the staff there at the venue, setting up, like, do you set your own mics up or are you expecting the microphones to be set up before you? Had that communication with the venue. We would come in and we knew immediately where we were on stage, what our mics were. We all set everything up, and the guys for the venues that we went to were like, oh, great, thank you. That's a great help. So I think organisation and planning is key to producing that, as well as, you know, even all the other stuff like accommodation and you know, food. What, how are you going to look after these people on tour? So for the US tour, it was mostly us just trying to traveling from state to state. And then when we toured Europe, we had a tour manager who pretty much looked after us. So we were in a van, and then he knew exactly where he was driving to each of the venues and everything. And he kind of got us there on time, because actors are notorious for talking a lot.
And have you got any fun, meaty stories you can tell us about meeting the fan base and...
Okay, so quickly, cosplay. Horror story, one of the stories, it was called Mr. Banana. Yes, somebody did come to a show as a banana. And people went nuts. They loved it. They absolutely loved it. And we've got photos somewhere of us standing next to a fan audience member dressed as a banana. Immense. So, yes, cosplay at events like that is also very, very fun. And then the fun one was, we were in like a studio, and this was in the States, and Noel Gallagher was playing in the bigger venue next door. And we kind of finished at the same time, and we were walking out the same stage door, and there are all of these people holding Oasis albums doing this like meerkat bobbing thing. So we walk out, and I've never felt such a wave of disappointment. People doing this. who the hell are you? But then, just at that exact moment, as we exited out to get to the van, there was a group of No Sleep fans who'd just seen our show, who then suddenly went nuts and went, oh my God, it's you guys! Where? And we were all kind of like, hey! Back. And then all these people with Oasis albums were like, maybe they are famous. Who are they? So, yeah, touring is fun. Touring is lovely.
And you're about to also do some more things with Unbound Theatre, but yes. You've worked with them on Professor Cronomier. And please give a woo-woo if you heard Professor Cronomier.
Woo-woo-woo!
Yeah,
one person!
Yay!
I'll pay you
more
later.
More people should jump on. So tell us about Professor Cronomier, because that has also been something that you took to the streets in a kind of traverse performance too, right? Not just a venue.
Yeah, well, it was actually the other way round. It started as a live show. In 2019, we were commissioned by the local council and I was approached to play an eccentric storyteller, Doctor Who person who was basically going to talk about history in Aylesbury.
Woo-hoo! Aylesbury!
So we did that and it was received very, very well. Loved the character, a lot of fun. And then it got to 2020 and another live show. Hooray! Don't need to tell you what happened there. And so the writer, Dario Knight, who is amazing, just had this kind of off-the-cuff idea that he was going to start writing it to be recorded as something to do in lockdown, because all actors and everyone who had anything to do with theatre was just like, can't perform, audio! So he started writing just off the cuff a historical tale involving my character and said, would I record it? And it was done as like a first person narration, audiobook story. And so I was ending up by playing all the characters I could think of, many, many voices. And then from there, we had a lot of fun doing that. So we got more. And as it went on, we started to develop between us. So for the live show, I didn't have like that much input into the character, but then as the audio progressed, I'm talking with Dario a lot, and we developed this whole backstory and story arc that is now planned to cover 6 seasons of The Professor. Season 5 was released earlier in the year in conjunction with our second live show, so we did get to perform again. I was sword fighting on the cobbled streets of Aylesbury earlier on in the year, which was a lot of fun. So it kind of worked backwards with that. And the way I sort of describe it is that the character's slightly different. So you know how you've got like the MCU, like Marvel Cinematic Universe, and then you've got the actual comic books. So they can exist in sort of like their same planes, but slightly alternate, and you can recognize the character from both, but it's not like exactly the same. I sort of have to have that mindset because the live shows, they're meant to be educational, they're meant to be family orientated. Whereas the audio stories, I do think kind of border a bit more on a darker edge at times. Sure. So that's how I sort of keep the difference between me, and then it's fun playing some of the other characters who I like. Astrid, who is like essentially my companion, I work very, very closely with the actress who plays her in the show, is Hannah, and then of course I had to impersonate her for all of the audio stuff as well, which is quite fun.
Brilliant. That's a big challenge, right, to do all those different voices. But
God, I think in the last one I was doing like 20 odd characters, yeah, all with their distinctive voices, and then Dario will write a new series and it will come back and it will be this character that I did like 2 years ago, and it's like, what did they sound like? I'm going to go back to the files and try and remember what they sounded like.
I have to do that. When you've got, like, because the Scottish podcast, we've kind of do over 60 years, don't we? And it's, I have to remember what Helen's like. But yeah, talking of, because Helen, Drunk Helen, is one of my favourite characters ever. Who would you say amongst your favourite characters you've played of late?
Well, I've got, the Professor is very, very near and dear to my heart. I love Hannah from Cyclone.
Yeah.
She's a dark.
She's horrible.
Yeah, she's brilliant. no, there's a little bit of a rivalry going on between our characters.
No, there isn't. It's fine.
And especially because we did the read-through of season 2 not that long ago. God. So season 1 is only just coming out. We've done the read-through for season 2. And
I swore a lot, and I don't generally swear very much, really. But when some of these things were revealed, it's very exciting.
Yeah, so, you've read the script before, had you?
I hadn't read it, so it was a complete shock when these things were revealed. So you have to wait, we can't tell you what they are. But it's very, very exciting.
And then in No Sleep, I've done a lot of different characters, but I think my favourite ones was, it's a story called Day 416, where I got to play a very sarcastic and sweary space pilot.
Mm-hmm.
Because being British on an American show, obviously I tend to do a lot of RP and being very nice, or I do sweet old grannies or witches or really, really twisted demonic voices.
Nice.
Or young boys. Very strange. I do a lot of young American boys. That sounds really weird.
Yes.
No, voices. I voice a lot of American children.
Yeah.
But yeah, so being able to play a sarcastic, sweary space pilot and just swear my head off was so much fun. Might have given a few more takes than I needed on that one.
Release.
Yes. Yeah, so I was like, I like saying that line. I'm going to do that one again. And then another one was playing a character that I remember this one. Particularly, the story was it's based on a folk tale about the girl who is gifted to always jewels fall from her mouth. So she's gifted like that, but this was like a much darker version of that, and she's been imprisoned, and then she just goes completely insane. I had this speech that was all growly and spitting, and whilst, spoiler, killing someone. David Ault, I think, if anyone knows myself and David Ault, we kill each other a lot. And yeah, that speech was so visceral, so visceral, and that was really fantastic to really get into that, and yeah, very, very guttural and tight throat, and yeah, lots of...
I think
term.
That's a good way to finish that. So, yeah, any questions from the audience, please, for our lovely Erica Sanderson?
And, of course, I love Wee Mary from St Kilda.
I was like, please say Wee Mary. I'm going to come to the back over here. Hello.
Hi.
What's your name, please?
Kim.
Hello, Kim. Welcome. I wonder if you've got any groovy questions you could ask for Erica.
I was thinking of something.
I have. I've just been completely jumped over here.
I think the closest thing I got to... So you were talking about how you wore like a cardigan, and for the uptight character, you would make yourself more uptight, and for the looser character, you would pull up your sleeves.
Yeah.
And that sort of thing. Do you have any other tricks that you use, bag of tricks, for, like, I suppose, because what I've realized as a director, when I was doing my audio drama, was the people that I thought did the best almost had a bit of an exaggerated expression, or like they were very, very expressive and they had a very clear character in a way, and then you could always scale it down. You're like, okay, a little less of that. So how do you go for a very, very stark characterization or something that's very far away from yourself? Do you got any?
I am a great believer in physicalizing in front of the mic. So one of the things that I would do is playing like an elder. I got a role where I was playing an elderly American woman, and she was described as being in a home and in a rocking chair and very kind of decrepit. So for me personally, you know, as actors, we always want to make sure that this is all being used well, our chest and our diaphragms and everything. But then I find sometimes that if you collapse that, you're actually constricting the air, which immediately will change your voice. So that was the first thing that I did. And then to trying to get that sort of rocking motion as well, so I get that slight hiccup in my voice, and then I decided that she had palsy, so I let one side of my face go slack, and then you put the accent and the age on, and then all of a sudden you've got this slightly shaky woman in front of her sitting in a rocking chair talking about all of the things that she can see through her window. And so this would be how I would perform in front of the microphone for that. And I find that if I physicalize it, then that will help produce the sound. So collapsing everything, you can hear everything get tighter. Whereas if I'm playing, for example, well, as you saw, doing live action, Hannah,
boom.
I mean, even with the uniform, even with the uniform, someone asked me, does that uniform make you stand like that, or is that a character choice? And so it's a bit of a both, because it's quite tight fit. But when I'm playing Hannah, and she's one of these very, very direct people, then you try, as actors, we're always trying to embody the character that we play. And on stage, we've got all of this, she says, for the benefit of the recording, waving her arms about in a very over-dramatic fashion. We have our faces, we have our bodies that we use costume. But when we only have our voice, we still need to find a way of narrowing all of that down so it goes from what the actor's intention is to the listener, if that makes sense. So playing a stark character where you're wanting to pull back all of the emotion, it's almost akin to almost camera acting, where you're trying to internalize it but still put it out through the voice, if that makes sense. And so when I do play sort of not quite so overly emotional characters, there is that deliberate pullback, but you still want to try and get the intensity behind your voice. because rather than playing out to all of these people, I mean, I've done a lot of open air stuff as well. So, you know, when you're playing outside to like 200 people and it's like, it's more than panto, you've got to be ridiculously big.
Oh, no, it isn't.
Hey! Yeah. And then coming down to something where it's just you and the microphone, you have to be able to encompass that range. So yeah, I think it is embodying, play the character. That's what we do as actors. Play the truth of the words, find the character, and play that. I think that
play
be...
is key, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Word. Be the truth. Read the lines as well. Read the script. Know your character. Know their emotions. Know their feelings. And that I think does translate down the microphone. I think you can tell someone who's just reading and then someone who is embodying or performing. I think.
That's a grand answer. Thank you, Kim. Kim, what do you make?
So
wait a second, Kim. Why don't you come out and have a little sit down for a second with us? Join us. Can we have a round of applause for Kim? I think you all need this. Have a seat. So yes, tell us what you do, what you make.
Well, I've only finished one audio drama, so I don't know if I can count.
Well, so many people. You finished it! Yay!
Well, I finished it. Yeah, it's mostly finished. So I spent all of August putting it together. I had actors come in one at a time in my home studio, which is basically just a box in the corner.
Well,
it's just
really
a box of blankets
that, right?
Held together by a PVC pipe. It looks awful,
standard,
but it works. It actually works. I'm pretty satisfied about that. But it's... It's Phantom of the Opera, but it's based on the novel. So it's trying to reawaken the gothic horror and going a little bit away from the musical version of
Exciting.
Phantom of the Opera.
Amazing.
We have kept it fairly close to the novel, except for the ending.
Oh.
Because we both thought the ending was ridiculous. So we did take some artistic liberty with the ending, and we did change that, but it became a bit more like Indiana Jones action scene at the end. So it was like, we gotta get out, we're all drowning, oh no, let's get to the surface, sort of thing.
This sounds very exciting. So when can we hear this? Where will it be released?
So I've got 2 episodes on Spotify so far, but I'm pretty new to this, so I'm trying to figure out what's the best place to market it, which is the best, I suppose, a network you could work together with, or could you approach the BBC? I have no idea yet, so that's what I'm working on now.
I think there's lots of people here who would love to talk to you afterwards and can help guide you, including myself and these folks here. So,
yeah.
Audio Drama Sunday hashtag.
Ding, ding. So what is it called?
Phantom of the Opera.
And the production company is?
Voice Weavers.
Voice Weavers. Can we look out for that, folks? Can we give a round of applause to Kim?
Thank
you, Kim. Lovely to meet you. We'll hopefully talk later.
Thank you.
So, with this next guest, I do need a little bit of help from you, a lovely audience, essentially. So, yes, whatever I say, are you listening? Can you say we are? Can we have a little practice? Are you listening?
We are!
Hooray! So, are we ready, folks?
I am.
For the band.
Went to drama school for
together.
This, you know.
Okay. Positions, ready?
Rehearse?
I think we'll be on that now. Okay. Oh, David!
Hi.
Lovely to see you! Let's have a round of applause for David!
Good. Yeah, it is wonderful to see you rather than just editing you. That
yes.
sounds weird.
Yes, you too.
So, no Scottish accents today?
No.
No slightly weird sketch to start the conversation?
Well, it's live, isn't it? So, I mean, the girth of it is just going to be what it is, right?
yes, it is live. You're right. Let's have a cheer from the audience if you're live. If I could just, by the way, audience participation makes me really anxious.
It's over now. You're all good.
So if I could ask, what's with the bottle?
Oh, the instrument.
An instrument, okay.
Yes.
And the dinging and the.
Oh, these. Well, we're trying to create an audio fiction concept album.
An audio fiction concept album.
Yeah.
And what are they trying to make?
Yes,
thank you.
They're there.
Because of course music tells a story all its own.
Yeah, I was going to say that.
You were going to say that?
Yeah.
Using a breath in a desperado bottle. Nice touch, I like that.
Do you like that? I don't think it's been done before.
You don't think it's been done before?
This particular ensemble. I mean, have you heard this together before?
No, that's very true. I can see why. Out of curiosity, what does a concept album actually mean, though, Sarah?
We'll show you. Ready? And one, two.
Yeah, that's quite accurate. Yeah, no, that's fair
you.
Enough.
Thank
fair
you.
Enough.
People should listen to the tower, shouldn't they, for inspiration to make their own if they want to.
So yeah. People should hasten to this. People should frisson.
Listen, are you listening?
We are.
Yes, they are. That's so exciting. There's people like your people with gorgeous, discernible ears actually listening and beautiful souls. So, David Devereux, they're listening to you and being inspired by your work and your concept album, Awesome Show the Tower.
Season 2 is coming out like in a week and a half.
That's nearly right now, right? And there's so much inspiring audio fiction out there every day, isn't there, audience? Isn't there? Yeah. I mean, pretty much 80% of you are making it. I've been inspired by all of you, I have to say. So, to be honest, David, you noise wizard, shall we essentially, this beauteous story in the world you bring to life, shall we just talk about it now on Indie AF Live?
Yes, God, yes.
Yes, let's just sit down, shall we? Thank you very much. Give a round of applause. Be amazing. Be amazing. Mass apologies for Sarah's brain. David, you've come all the way from Scotland to do this today. That means so much. And of course, all the travel that you've done today to come. Thank you. It really means a lot to see your faces, to support all of these folks and myself. And as a non-binary creature yourself, I wonder if we could start there straight away. I wonder if you have any inspiration for folks just to be their own true creative self, right? Because I think audio fiction seems to be a supportive space to be who you are. And what kind of advice have you got to folks for embrace their own?
Starting with a big question.
I know,
okay.
Just start there.
Well, for me, I think the audio fiction community was kind of how I found that out about myself, which sounds quite strange.
Right.
But it sounds slightly sad to say this, but like I think before audio fiction, I'd never really been part of a community. Okay. Thank you for not owing. Thank you. I think I kind of found myself through making audio fiction and through listening to other shows and hearing all these different perspectives. And I'd never really kind of experienced those kind of stories, those kind of perspectives before. And I think one day I was sort of listening to one, I don't remember which one, listening to one of them and then just something popping in my brain going, oh, this is why I relate to this so much.
That's so powerful. That's amazing that is what it's taken for you to think of your own self too, yeah?
Yeah, and I think it just emphasises the importance of those stories and having them, and yes. Having them told and having them out in the ether and them getting lots of money to make more of them so that more people can listen to them.
Yes. You said money, exciting.
Yes. Sorry, was I not supposed to say
the word? The more you say it, the more we all might get in this room.
But yeah, no, I think just being true to yourself means you sort of write better stories because you can kind of write more honestly. Yeah. And, you know, we're talking about the tower and the tower's always kind of been the way that I kind of figure myself out and figure out what it is I'm thinking about, what I'm anxious about, what I'm kind of wanting to tell other people about. And I think that was sort of a natural byproduct of it almost. But yeah, no, I absolutely love this weird little audio fiction community.
Let's give a huzzah! Yeah, we mentioned The Tower. It's your new show, as you say, it's coming out very, very shortly. I'm very excited to be an ickle part of it. It's been a wonderful journey with you. And you're about to launch it everywhere. And I think if you don't know of it yet, let's have a little listen.
I always thought that the end of the world would be a sudden thing. Like, I'd wake up one morning and it would be gone, and everyone would just have to deal with it. It's strange to say that I grew up with that idea. horrible thing to have to grow up with. The truth is that the end of the world happens slowly. Some people saw it. They even tried to stop it. We saw the stars disappearing and we just shrugged. The clouds seemed to linger. They were just clouds. It got colder. We put a coat on and kept going to work. Kept on doing everything the same. Someone else would deal with it. We lost the stars. We lost the sun. We lost the sky, and we watched it happen, waiting for someone to tell us the world had ended. By the time we noticed, it had already gone. We were lost in the fog, wondering where we went wrong, lamenting what we had lost and what to do with what was left. It feels like the end of the world up here. Nothing but the fog and an almighty work of despair built on hubris and death.
The Tower, Part 3. Coming soon.
Oh, I just feel zen listening to your podcast, Dave. So, yeah, what was your inspiration for this? Can you talk to us a little bit about your creative process in developing it too, which I think is fascinating as a musician and writer?
Thank you. Yeah, well, like, I kind of, after making the first season of Middle Below, I kind of wanted to do something that was a bit more experimental and a bit more kind of music-centric, because that's where I kind of come from. Basically, at the end of, I think, 2017, 2018, a lot of things all changed at once. Like, I moved house, I got a new job, and I started a new relationship, all within the space of, like, 2 weeks. And that was just a lot of change all to happen at once. And so there was just a lot of processing and thinking going on, and I think a lot of that just ended up sort of going into the sort of background of the show. Mm-hmm. And then context for this, I do steal a lot of ideas from video games, but then I sort of they evolve into their own thing afterwards. I was playing the video game Celeste, and which if you haven't played, you should absolutely play. It's a wonderful game. And I love the soundtrack to that game, and I love the story, and I love the idea behind it. And there was just a particular point where I just had this sort of light bulb in the back of my brain going, ooh, hang on, this could be something. And then over the course of like a week and a half, the first season just sort of fell out of me. Yeah. The process of kind of making it more in more of a kind of concept album actually ended up coming in later on, because initially it was just going to be an audio drama, and then it was just going to be music and dialogue. There wasn't going to be any sound design. And then it was this kind of year-long process of testing stuff, going, oh, that doesn't quite work. Trying different kinds of music and going, oh, that doesn't work either. Mm-hmm. So it was a very sort of slow development process, but I was very lucky to work with a very good team of people who I know really well.
Yes.
That's actually another thing. I wanted to write a role for Katrina Allen, whose voice you heard there, who plays the lead
role.
Amazing
actor. Yeah,
fantastic actor. I've known her for a very long time. Yeah. And she'd kind of done one-off parts and sort of the other stuff that I'd done, and I was kind of like, I feel like I'm underutilizing you because you're so very good at this and I haven't got anything for you. And Katrina obviously, as you heard, just took the character, ran with it, turned it into something amazing. And then it just sort of came together that way. So it was very much trying stuff out, not working, starting again, this very slow process. And then it came out and it went much better than I was expecting it to. It was like a weird little side project, and now it's become like the main show, which is always good when that happens.
Yes, very exciting. And I think it's been funded by the Scottish version of our Arts Council in, yes, here in England,
yes,
which has enabled you to have some breathing space, right, and to do, yes, other, push the boundaries of what you want to do. And so what has that funding meant to you as a creative, and how can this lot pursue the same kind of help to get the projects together?
Well, I would start by saying the kind of biggest bit of advice I can tell you about getting funding. So this kind of goes with Creative Scotland, and I think it also counts for Arts Council England as well. All government arts funding is money laundering. And like, once you've sent in an application, so like, don't be worried about sending in an application being like, oh, I don't know if this deserves the money. Like, they're wanting to spend that money. Like, we got our funding from Creative Scotland and it came back to us, and we were sort of assigned a person to kind of keep track of stuff. So I was kind of like, so I messaged them, I'm just like, do you want to call? Do you want to like, how, do you want updates? Do you want me to send you the scripts? Like, how involved do you want to be? And then I just got an email back being like, no, just let us know when it's done, like a year later. So just, so yeah, like I think there is a way of writing them to get funding, but I don't know how it works with Arts Council England. But with Creative Scotland, at least, if you send in an application and it gets declined, they send back notes basically saying, if you change these, we'll probably accept your funding application. Mm-hmm. So
let's all move to Scotland! Yeah.
yes, do that. Quickly. I think the biggest skill is budgeting. I think if you can, what they're looking, the only bit they're actually going to read is the budget. I think if you can put together a really big budget and make sure you add 10% for contingency, learn that one the hard way, then you've got a very, very good chance of getting it. They're awful to do. They're awful to write. They're I hate them. I can feel my life force being like seeping out of me when I'm writing them. But they're much less of a stress than crowdfunding, I found, and they're also very much more hands-off than crowdfunding as well. So I'd highly recommend it. I think in terms of what that meant for the show, it meant that we could do R&D, which is something I'd never done before, and it was something I really wanted to do.
That was fun, part of the process, right? Actually, you, yes, have time to breathe rather than, we need this character done, and that's, you have the script, get on with it, bye.
Yeah, well, it meant that the cast could become more involved in the writing process, which I thought was very, very important. It meant, like, so what I did was I sort of wrote the first three episodes of the new series, and then we had an R&D, like an afternoon R&D with the cast where we read the scripts, and then I kind of got their notes from them, kind of going, well, this doesn't quite work for this character, or kind of like, this, it's not clear what this character wants in this scene. We kind of did that, and it was incredibly useful. And then it also meant that I could kind of ask them, like, well, what in the next three episodes, what are you wanting to explore? What's important to you and what's important to your character in the next three episodes? And it meant writing the second half of the season was a lot easier, because it meant that I already had this list of things that I knew the characters kind of wanted to talk about. And it just made, I think part three is the sort of strongest written series out of the three, because it's not just, you know, me sitting in a small room by myself going, the whole cast has had input on it, and also we had a very good executive director in Ella Watts, who Miss Daly.
Let's give a round of applause for her.
And she was very good at going, you can't, like, you need to decide what this actually leads to or what this actually means. You can't just keep kicking it down the road until you get to the last season. You need to know what the answer is to these questions, or like what this,
a few.
There's a few questions, but like what this is leading up to, rather than just being like, it means something. It means whatever the listeners get out of it. Like, no. You need, what does it mean to you? What do you want out of this? Which was very useful, and it's meant that we're kind of going into part four, which will come out. So thank you. I'm glad somebody's excited. And then maybe we're going into that already, kind of an idea of where, what we want to do with the story and where that's going. And I think if you have the capacity and the space to do R&D sessions with the cast, absolutely do that, because it means you're just getting more eyes, more voices, and more perspectives on the script writing process.
And as an actor as well, it was very exciting to be involved in that. So yeah, more R&D is what we need. And also somebody, if you can have that kind of Ella Watts type, someone to push things, then good. And if you are someone that wants to do that, then advertise yourself on the Audio Drama Hub, on Twitter, on the hashtag Audio Drama Sunday, Audio Fiction Sunday kind of sites, as someone who wants to, and maybe someone would yearn to have you on their team. Super. Thank you. So I just want to say, regarding the getting successful funding, I have a very exciting announcement to make on behalf of the core Audio Drama Hub Facebook admin team. I don't know if you want to come out too, Kareem, because you're part of this grooviness. We have fathomed together, I don't know if you're ready. Are you ready for this announcement?
Yeah!
Just checking. I think it needs a bit of thunder, maybe, Sammy. You can do that underneath if you want. And any tinging you want to do, Erica, feel free. But yeah, essentially, we are hugely excited to announce something coming this November. It is Inglorious High Wycombe, the very first ever
Audio Drama Hub Podfest.
Yes, we thought it was about time we put our money where our admin team is and tried to put a podcast convention together for fiction podcasts. It's happening with workshops aplenty. We have the amazing, let's give these people cheers, Sir Tom of Crowley doing an audio fiction writing workshop. We have the amazing Kareem, and sorry about me too, I'm tagging along, doing some voice acting and directing. And also the amazing David Defro is going to run an editing workshop. It's so exciting. Alongside that, there will be other events. There'll be potentially, if this hasn't balled completely, another Indie AF Live! There will be Dashingly Quirky Live, where we would like your new writing pieces. If you're a writer in the room, we're looking for 10-minute pieces, which are any theme, any style of fiction, and they need to have a walk-on part for an audience member. They need to have live Foley done by either the cast and or the audience, and be as much fun as possible. And there'll be stuff online on the Audio Drama Hub this week. So, yeah, I'm very excited to announce that, and I look forward to hopefully seeing you folks there. Let's have one more huzzah. Thank you. But yeah, so, key thing, because we talked a little bit in a kind of jokey kind of way about concept album in the bizarrest of sketches, but I want to know really, in your opinion, what does concept album actually mean to you?
Well, so I think what's interesting to me about the idea of a concept album is that it's such a sort of amorphous, loose term. Like, there are a lot of musicals, like Les Mis, and quite a few of Andrew Lloyd Webber's musicals that started out as concept albums.
Yeah.
Like Jesus Christ Superstar was a concept album initially, mm-hmm. and then it got turned into a musical. So I think the sort of general term would be just like an album of songs that tells a narrative. Because mm-hmm. the sort of example I always point to is Jeff Wayne's War of the Worlds, which is one of my favorite albums.
Same. I love that. I had that on double tape. Oh, and yeah. Listened so many times.
Yeah, I think I had it on tape as well, like that, yeah. that level. But also you've got things like Wish You Were Here and Dark Side of the Moon, where it's less about telling a story and it's more about an emotional journey. Mm-hmm. And I think that's kind of, at least at the moment with The Tower, at least, that's kind of what I'm doing, where it's much more about, it's less about, you know, following a story from start to finish. It's more about moods and kind of creating a space and sitting in it for a bit, rather than kind of going, we start here, we end over here. Yeah. It's much more like, right, come into this space for a bit and just kind of let it wash over you a little bit, sit down with it, listen to it all in one go, and kind of become absorbed in it, and then when it's finished, kind of let it sit for a bit and go out into the world, and hopefully things might be slightly different.
I mean, did you feel as well like I did when we played the clip this morning and the show, that just a definite different kind of ambience came from the crowd? I mean, how can you explain what that was like?
I mean, so like, I got it from the crowd. For me, I was sort of like, oh god, like. But yeah, no, I do get from people that it is a very relaxing thing to listen to, and I always appreciate hearing that. And that was very much the point. This idea that, as much as it is talking about some very very in-depth stuff and stuff that can be quite heavy, it's doing so in a way that's quite calm and considered, but is also in kind of like a safe way. Like, nothing, there's not really a lot of conflict in the series. There's not really a lot of arguments. There's not a lot of fighting. There's not any kind of There's a few sort of dramatic moments, but there's no real sense of danger.
It's intrepid and exciting,
yeah.
What happens, and also the tension you build so beautifully with what's happening to Kiri's character. But also, I just think with the sound design behind it, kind of the foreboding character of the tower itself. I wonder if you talk a little bit about that and how you built that into the story.
Well, for the most, like, the initial idea was we'll go for like a minimal sound design approach. That kind of fell out the window because apparently I can't leave anything alone. But for the most part, like, there are some elements that are very kind of, it's mostly, you know, torches and fires, that kind of thing. And then there's a few episodes where it's just, you know, footsteps with a particular kind of reverb on them. I think probably the most in-depth bit of sound design is the wind. That was me spending an afternoon in front of a microphone going, just making wind sounds and
amazing.
Adding lots of delays and things to them. Feeling very silly, but then also kind of, it gave a slightly more ethereal quality to the tower and to that space. And I think it kind of, it feels like a slightly more haunted thing to listen to, just because you've got that, something that sounds like wind, but also like a little bit like a person.
Ethereal, kind of, yeah, you're trying to work it out, right?
Yeah.
In your brain, what's
it's
happening?
Like, you know, if you're in a house late at night and then you hear like a draft coming through the windows, it can sometimes sound like somebody whistling. And I was trying to kind of capture that kind of feeling with it.
Amazing. And I think other folks have asked me, especially with your work, I said to them I was talking to, and they want to just fathom, you know, did the music come first? Is it that concept first, story first? How have you melded these different beautiful ways of storytelling together so beautifully?
Well, I think for part one and two, it was very much I'd edit a scene, put it together, have the sound design, and then I'd kind of be like, right, I need a piece of music. I'd either have a piece of music ready to go already, or I'd kind of be like, right, I need to write something for this scene and it needs to be a bit like this. And then, when I'm editing the tower, I have two project files open. I have one which is the edit, and there's another which is the soundtrack. And then, so I'll kind of click between the two and then kind of go, right, I need something that's this length. But for part one and two, I was kind of making the scene fit the music, so I'd kind of add spaces and things and put these little bits in. Whereas with part three, it's been the other way around, where the scene would kind of come first and the music would change. Like, there's an episode in part three, there won't be spoilers, I promise, where there's a piece of music that's 8 minutes long, and it covers most of an episode. I think you know which one it is.
Yes.
How that kind of came together was I had this kind of demo, and I put that up over the scene, played it, you know, cried a little bit, and then was like, right, okay, that needs to be longer, kind of worked out how many times it would need to be repeated to kind of fill the space, and then went back to the original demo in the soundtrack project file and then developed the music that way. So it's been much more integrated for part three. It's been much more kind of they've been much more interweaved than previous seasons, where it's mostly been, I need a piece of music for this bit, this works, stick it on there. Wow. It's been a much more kind of all-in-one kind of process this time around, which is good, because that's kind of what I was wanting from part one, so it's nice to finally be able to do it that way.
Yes, and instruments-wise, there's quite a lot of different kind of influences in there, and obviously, as a talented musician as you are,
you
play, obviously, lots of things live and experiment and play. So, yeah, can you talk to us a bit about why you've chosen that specific sound as well for the show?
So, the main instrument for the tower it's like a Wurlitzer electric piano, but it's kind of been run through a few effects. It's not a real one, it's a virtual one, because I can't afford a real Wurlitzer, because they're very, as much as they're lovely, and I've played a couple of them, they are very expensive and very old.
Yes, so if anyone benefactors want to send David, get in touch.
yes, please. Like, I know we're joking, but if you have one. It's this very sort of warm, fuzzy kind of sound that I really, really loved. And as much as like there is acoustic piano in there as well, it's a virtual one.
I kind of wanted this to sound a bit more unreal and have sounds where you're like, oh, I'm not really sure what that is.
Yeah.
And that's kind of moved into part three as well. And also with part three as well, I'm going to try not to get too nerdy about this because it can get very, very long-winded.
No, people want for lean into the nerd.
For in between doing part two and part three, I ended up buying some like analog, proper like analog synthesizers with, you know, the wires and the knobs and things. Yes. And it's been wonderful trying to learn how to use those first of all, but then also kind of having that very immediate kind of feedback of rather than having to click on something and change a number, you're kind of actually moving stuff in front of you.
Trying to be physically moving,
And then also like, you know, the way virtual synthesizers work, if you, you know, if you make a wrong note, you can just go in later and fix that note. Whereas if you're recording something from like an analog synth, like one, if you make a mistake, you have to record the whole thing again.
Yeah.
Or you're just like, okay, that was a mistake. Like, does that lead anywhere? So it's been interesting to think about it in those terms and kind of go sort of think a little bit less like this needs to sound perfect or this needs to, you know, be completely lined up and in rhythm, and also just kind of going with what the how the performance has come out and how the sound has come out as well. Because the thing about the big analog synth that I use, I'm nearly finished, I promise.
Keep going, I love it.
The thing about it is that you can't save any of the settings. So if you've got a particular sound, unless you physically write down or you draw a picture or take a picture, you can't get that sound back. And even if you do, you know, write it down or take a picture, it's never going to be exactly the same. There's always going to be something. So it means that, like, you know, once those sounds have been recorded, it's very unlikely that you're going to get those sounds again, which kind of...
Once in a lifetime.
Yeah.
Makes it more amazing.
It gives it that, it gives each kind of sound a slightly more unique quality, which I think just sort of added an extra element to the soundtrack, I think.
Yeah. And you talked a little bit about learning and what you learned. I mean, what... We all try and progress, don't we? Get better at what we do. And what would you say are the core things that you've kind of learned and progressed in yourself in this last season?
Well, I think it's interesting because at one point I had to go back to the project file for season one.
Yeah.
And the project files are so small. Like, there's maybe like 10 tracks.
Okay.
Whereas with this time round, there's about 60.
Yeah.
So. Wow. Even just in terms of size, it's become a different thing. But I think the big thing I've learned with part three is just learning about making music fit a bit more with a scene. Mm. And like down to like time codes and like, okay, it needs to be this length and, it needs to change. It's precisely this point and kind of working with it that way. Because I found the scoring process for part three quite difficult. And I think a lot of that is just because I've done it twice already. Mm. And there's always just that concern of like, is this the same thing? Is this still the same vibe? Like, is it becoming something else? Is this something different? Does it not fit? Because that was a big concern with part one. Like, I remember I made a piece of music and then it was initially going to be like a main theme and then played it to the cast. And they were kind of like, it's good, but I don't quite think this is fitting, and they were right, but I guess there's always that concern of like, I hope it works, I hope it fits with the story and that it fits in with the rest of the soundtrack that exists already.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's been learning that, but then also kind of learning to just trust myself, I guess, a bit more and kind of go like, no, you do know how to do this, you've done this twice before already, like, you just need to just give it time and not overthink it and not stress about it too much and just see how it comes out.
Yes. I mean, are you worried about the pressure of expectation?
Oh God, yes, all the time. Yes, and I include myself in that as well. Like, you know, I think what has happened without fail every single time for the season is that I've got to the end of the season, I've kind of gone, okay, it's fine, I'm happy with it. Like, it's not as good as I was kind of hoping it would be. But like, it's at a point where it sounds good and I think it works. But then like coming back to it, maybe like a couple of days later and going, no, 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 this is actually really good. No, I'm happy with this. This is absolutely fine. I think it's important to get that distance, I think, once you've finished a thing.
Yes.
Because that's something I'm really bad at. I'm very bad at finishing an edit, going away for literally 10 minutes, coming back and going, right, time to make some notes. And it's like, no, 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 you need more space from it.
I do remember you talking about that when we were recording the bits and bobs that I was involved in, that, yeah, you were going to give yourself space from that before you sat down to properly hone it.
Yeah, you've got to let stuff, what's the word? Brew, I guess, there's a better word. Yes. Incubate, that's the word I was looking for.
I was thinking fester, so I wasn't even suggesting.
It's probably more accurate.
Incubate is much better. I mean, launching anything is difficult. And of course, you have the legacy of everything you've produced so far at Tin Can and so on. But how excited are you about this launch into the world? And what are you doing to promote it?
Well, I'm very excited about this one because I think it feels more... I feel like part three links up more with part one because I feel like part two is still obviously part of the story, but it's more of a self-contained kind of narrative.
Yeah.
Whereas part three is very much like we're dealing with what happened in part two, but we're also starting to answer some of the questions that were brought up in part one.
Yes.
And also reflecting on the journey that has happened since part one, not only of the characters, but also kind of the whole team, how much has changed in that time. Because I remember I was speaking to Katrina during the recording, and Katrina was like, it was very weird going back to part one because my voice has physically changed since then, and just little things like that, just realizing that like. Taking a moment to go think how much life has happened since we started releasing this show. Yeah. In terms of promoting it, we have oh.
a wild Hedley has appeared. Hello, Hedley Knights. How are you?
I'm good.
I haven't seen you in far too long. Very
I wanted to be professional then, but I was like, Hedley!
You can cuddle if you like.
No, it's okay. I'm attached to a microphone. we'll finish this and then I'll cuddle.
Yes, launching.
Yes.
What are you doing to make people aware of it's awesome?
So first of all, we actually have somebody doing marketing for us this time around, which has been
amazing.
Very helpful. It's my wife.
So they have their uses.
Yes, I'm very lucky to be married to someone who worked in marketing for 4 years, which has been great. But it has also meant that like...
She's on your case.
Yes, but basically. So have you done this video yet? Like, no, I don't like doing video content. Why?
It's been great though. I have seen them, so they're working.
Thank you. No, I have. Don't tell anyone, but I have actually been enjoying it. So we've had that. But then also, as part of our Creative Scotland funding, we have to do a live show at the end of September. So that's actually happening a couple of days before episode one comes out.
Very exciting. We'll put links on the show notes, folks, if you want to go.
Yes, please. And hopefully it'll be ready by the time you get there, because it's like a week and a half away, and I still haven't had a chance to sit down and turn it into a live show yet, but that's proving to be an interesting experience as well. But I'm very excited to do that.
Exciting. Well, I very much wish you the best of launches. It's been a wondrous show to listen to and be a cool part of. And yeah, your expertise in wondrous world weaving is something that other people should definitely set up and take notice of. So
thank you very much.
So thank you for sharing your talent with us and for coming on IndieAF today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. It's been
Hello.
Wonderful.
Okay.
Sarah?
Oh, yes?
It's the fun police.
Okay,
I'm
groovy.
Afraid we've reached peak levels of grooviness and we have to shut the show down now.
We have. So I think without further delay, let's just give a huge round of applause to our amazing David Deverell, Erica Sanderson, Sammy Sweaty, and all that remains to say is a hearty thank you to my everybody here and to you for coming today. Thank you so much. I very much appreciate you coming. And also to Oliver Morris of Cane and Fields, the Lightning Bottler, actor on The Goblet Wire, and editor of much, including some How I Died, Oz9 podcast. If you need an amazing editor, hit him up on at Oliver R. Morris on the Twitters. So thank you, my amazing audience, for coming to the first ever IndieAF Live. I hope you stay amazing, have fun, get out there, and make the thing. Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Dr. Charlie Tuggett here. Yeah, welcome aboard. You know, rumor was Spaceship Oz-9 was intended to take a bunch of rich folks to a new planet since, you know, we pretty much used up the one we have now. But, you know, since it's looking more and more likely the ship might be humanity's last stand, let's take a quick look around. Lots of dangers aboard the Oz-9.
Albert. How does a massive alligator go missing?
Are you telling me the four sacred tokens are all aboard the Oz-9?
Remind me again why we're doing this?
Allegiances are too muddled on this ship.
MCCACEC is, to the casual observer, a normal institution of higher learning.
Ah, but if you pull back the outermost layers...
I'm from Minnesota, where we like our lives as neat and as open as the inside of a freshly caught and cleaned walleye.
Do you know, I am now the only assassin aboard the ship.
What are you doing, Elaine?
It's Joe I want to watch, and I want to know what side he's on when the ship hits the fan.
Robbie, aren't they the most ridiculous people I've ever met?
Fetch that annoying bunch of trespassers so we can bring Pluto to heel. The new order starts today. Well, however this all plays out, if you have a strong stomach and a high tolerance for stupid, you can follow the Oz-9's adventures just about anywhere you listen to podcasts. I got a trot, Space Monkeys. Stay safe out there.
Discover the secret of St. Kilda. Come smell the heather and sit by the fire. Come talk and laugh with a community of like-minded souls seeking salvation. Come walk the rugged cliffs, listening to the screams of seabirds. Listen to the screams of something else far beneath. The Secret of St. Kilda, with voice talent from the Magnus Archives, the No Sleep Podcast, and the Amelia Project. Find us everywhere at The Kilda. Hope we don't find you first.